Welcome, everyone, to the second part of our special two-part episode of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we are finally going to have our long-awaited debate over all of the major awards this season, particularly MVP. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you, you can follow us on Twitter, at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can find us this year on iTunes, so we'd love it if you subscribe, downloaded, left some feedback. We'd love any reviews you could give. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so give them a follow, at FanRag Sports, and at FanRag NBA on Twitter for all of their NBA content. We're going to have a lot written as well as spoken on the MVP race over the coming days, as well as a bunch of great playoff previews, playoff coverage, etc., etc. So give FanRag Sports a follow on Twitter, at FanRag Sports. All of that said, I'm joined, as always, by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
Going well, Brian. And just a minor note, we're always on iTunes, not just this year.
That's true. We are, yes. And you can find our iTunes link at the bottom of our little audio boom player. So if you want to follow us there, that's how you do it. All right, Sarah, are you ready to go toe-to-toe and defend Kawhi's honor?
I'm ready. I'm a little hungry, so I apologize if I get hangry during any debate.
Oh, God. Okay. Duly noted. All right, so let's dive right in. We're going to go... MVP is by far the most controversial, because there are three, if not four, guys who are very deserving. And I want to preface this with two notes. One... We're recording this on Friday, April 7th, so there are still 6 days left in the regular season. There is still time for, you know, maybe one of these guys has like a 90-50-30 triple-double and seals the award that way. There's still time for us to change our picks, so we'll give our final picks in our playoff preview next week. Two, I just want to preface the MVP debate because it may get a little heated, and I want to just say we're not... arguing that there is only one pick. We're going to argue in favor of the guy we think should win, but all three, if not all four, of the guys who are among the top contenders for this award are very deserving. There is no one right answer, so everyone on Twitter right now who is saying, oh, Russell Westbrook is the MVP and there's no other debate, you're wrong. That is the stance. There are three or four very deserving candidates. With all of that said, Sarah and Mort, you both still have, you had your preseason pick was Kawhi. You both still have Kawhi atop your leaderboard with a week left in the regular season. Sarah, you're the Spurs fan here, so walk me through. Why is Kawhi Leonard the MVP this year?
Well, there's so many reasons that I don't really know where to start. I'm going to try to get this in some kind of order. So many things have been posted recently, so I'm going to try to condense it.
Okay.
Obviously, Kawhi is going to have the most wins out of your top four guys, whoever they may be. We're going with Harden, Westbrook, and LeBron.
Yes.
He has points per 100 possessions. He's at 38.9, which is second of those four guys only to Westbrook. His PER... 27.7, second of those guys only to Westbrook. True shooting percentage, he's at 61%, which is actually third of the four, but the one guy he's over is Westbrook. So he's more shooting a better percentage, more efficient than the only guy who has him on points per 100 possessions, and that's very close, by the way. Win shares per 48. You got Kawhi, it's number one out of the group at 0.267. And his on-court plus-minus is plus 9.1. And he was first of the four in that category as well. If you look at in the clutch, Kawhi is one of the top guys in the clutch. He's got, and that's, if you look at the Spurs as well, they're just slightly above what Westbrook is doing in OKC. They're third in the clutch at 29-12 in 41 games. The Thunder are 24-15 in 39 games, so they're tied with a bunch of teams for fifth. Kawhi, too, if I were going to look at like a specific time I would look at. There was a week at the beginning of March where he really, it was a microcosm of what he has done all season, but there was like at least two overtime games. They had a game in New Orleans that they nearly choked away, threw away, lost, however you want to put it. And Kawhi made plays on both ends of the floor that completely turned the game. He had two steals in the final few minutes. He had assists on the break that came out of those steals. He made shots. And then that week kind of culminated in the Houston game that everybody saw. Mm-hmm. But he had been doing that all week, you know, and top 30 points each time. So to me, like, MVP is, you know, a guy who has the most different weapons or tools in the bag to beat you. Mm. And I see Kawhi as being that guy. I mean, the other guys are terrific offensively, and obviously LeBron can do what Kawhi has done defensively, but it's to the point where we say, even, we make the distinction of, well, who can do that? Well, playoff LeBron can do it.
Right.
It's playoff LeBron, because, you know, he's earned his breaks, too. No question about that. But the fact that Kawhi does it every single night, I think, is what sets him apart at this point. He just has all of the different ways to beat you. The way that he can control the game from one end to the other is really something. His offense used to be the thing where he couldn't quite measure up to the other guys, but he's catching up to, if not caught up to them. Categories where he's not close this year are raw assists and even rebounds this year. But I'm going to have an article coming out soon, too, on B-Ball Breakdown of just looking at his growth as a playmaker.
Nice.
He's not going to, catch those guys, certainly not this year, in raw assists. And part of me, I would never question Pop, but part of me wishes that he was more in the situation that Harden is in, where they just said, screw it, you're the ball handler. You're bringing the ball up and run pick and roll 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And he has had a lot more possessions, but I would just like to see it be more even, just so we can more fairly judge. Like, you know, because I think he could do what like Mort alluded to in our first part, what Jimmy's done when he's had the chance to do that, and closer to what Harden's doing, even though similar to Russ, but not the same. Kawhi doesn't have the shooters around him that Harden has, but I would just love to see it so we had a more even field to judge. But even that being said, without all those opportunities, he's matching up quite well.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying advanced statistics paint him in a very strong light. And the playmaking is definitely the one knock I'm seeing most cited against him when you're comparing him to Harden and Westbrook. But as you said, it's not a question of talent. It's just a question of opportunity versus those two, where they're expected to be more like the central force on their offense. So, Mort, I'm going to let you piggyback off of Sarah to defend Kawhi as MVP.
So Kawhi started out the season being Scottie Pippen. He sort of settled for the low 20s and the all-around play and the great defense. Then suddenly he woke up one morning and decided, you know what? It's time for a software update, and now I'm kind of a little bit like Michael Jordan.
Wow.
Because he can't be like that over his last 36 games, which includes his 11-pointer in 14 minutes in the Lakers' loss the other day. Mm. He is averaging 27.6 points at night in just 34 minutes. He's doing it on almost 50% from the field, 35 from three, 85 from the line, and he gets to the line 8 times a game, 6 boards, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, just 2 turnovers. Kawhi is a very mistake-free player. He is one of the absolutely most polished players in the league. Like, where is his limitation? Like, think about it. With Russell Westbrook, okay, he's actually improved his 3-point stroke a whole bunch. He's on pace to hit 200 threes for the season. But outside of that, he's not like a necessarily strong shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi can shoot. He can get to the line. He can make it. LeBron is a poor free throw shooter, at least this year. I think it's 67%. Harden is not a strong defender. You could also argue that for Russ, who's just spent all of his energy doing offensive stuff this year. Kawhi is all around you. everywhere. And I've called him the best two-way player in the league for a while now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sticking to that. And I think that helps out tremendously. I really see no weakness with this guy, and given how the results, like Kawhi, when Kawhi plays, San Antonio is 57-14.
Man.
57. Oh, sorry. Okay. That wasn't as bad. That wasn't as good as I actually just presented. We had the other way around, the 54-17. But that's still amazing. 54 wins, 17 losses when he plays. That is dominant in his own right. And now look at the supporting cast. Look, the Spurs are a great organization. The sum of their parts are just, yeah. But LaMarcus Aldridge has been sort of average, to be quite honest with you. Pau Gasol has become a shooter, but he's become even more of a defensive liability. He doesn't even rebound a whole bunch anymore. Danny Green has refound his stroke, but he's still sort of hot and cold. He's not really been all that consistent. Tony Parker, I mean, look, I heard a guy is about to dig his grave outside, so I mean, that's where we're at, basically.
Cover your ears, Sarah.
Yeah. I know, this is horrible.
Patty Mills is not a playmaker. He's a fantastic shooter, but he's not a playmaker. So the vast majority of San Antonio's roster has guys who are experts in one field and not really all-around guys. They have one all-around guy in Kawhi, and somehow that still led them to the league's best defense. I don't care what kind of crazy advanced metrics people are going to throw against Kawhi like to make others rise up. This is otherworldly good.
Mm-hmm.
And you can argue one thing. Kawhi at no point during this season has chased around stats. It all comes through the flow of the game. And he's doing it by controlling the tempo. As a non-ball handler, mind you, he's controlling the tempo of the game. He is in complete control of the game as the non-primary ball handler, which is utterly ridiculous. He is, as far as I'm concerned, the MVP. And, I mean, look, it's not like the other guys aren't, you know, deserving, as you alluded to in your opening, Brian.
Right.
They most certainly are, but not this year. It's Kawhi's.
Can I say, though, the one thing that I resent about this race, even though I love how we have these great candidates and it's been close, is that it puts me in the position, like, the new argument is of who has more help or less help or whatever, and so it puts me in the position of, like, feeling like I have to tear down Kawhi's teammates and or the coaching staff. And, like, I won't do it. I'm not going to do it. I'll leave that to you, Mort. But, yeah, I just... God, that's the one thing that I've hated. It kind of came out of nowhere. And I'll address it more in the article as well, because I don't know where it's come from. This is, like, a new way of looking at MVP that really hasn't been part of it before.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, just to clarify, I'm not trying to crap on his teammates at all.
No, like, I got you.
One thing is Tony, who I mentioned. but that's because he has become a liability on basically both ends of the court. That's kind of where I'm at.
That's all.
Oh, come on. He has.
Yeah.
But it's more, my point is, none of those guys are all-around guys. So, you know, he carries a lot of that responsibility. And when you have to sort of be the defensive anchor, when you have Tony Parker and Pau Gasol alongside you, both are horrific defenders, then having the league's best defense is remarkable. It's truly remarkable.
Yeah, I feel like he often suffers from the prestige or the legacy of that silver and black, you know, and having Coach Pop. And...
Mm.
Yeah, you have to value what Pop brings to the table, obviously, but I mean, he always will tell you that the players on the floor win the games, and there's no question that Kawhi is far and away the spearhead of that. He was the lone all-star. As you mentioned, LaMarcus, for most of the year, was very inefficient again. He just recently has started to come on a little stronger in the last month, And literally, before that, it was a rough year. So, yeah. I mean, Kawhi deserves more credit. I know that sounds crazy, but he deserves more credit than he's received for the year that they've had.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, think about... Here's what... I mean, one of the many things that's perplexing about this MVP race is how preseason expectations play into it, which is really what's been working a lot in James Harden's favor. But even for the Spurs, you know, like, they lost Tim Duncan. You expected them to take a step back, and now here we are on the final Friday of the regular season, and they have 60 wins. It's their first back-to-back 60-win season ever, right, Sarah?
Yep. That's incredible to me. With all the roster turnover that they had, they were able to come back and do that. Yeah.
Right.
And you got to put a lot of that on Kawhi.
Yeah. So, like, you know, again, I'm going to just keep saying this throughout the entire time we talk about MVP. He is super deserving in any other year. You know, you put this against, like, Derrick Rose's MVP year a couple years ago, he blows Derrick Rose out of the water.
Oh, absolutely.
That said, I'm going to go in a different direction. You know, you guys both know I had James Harden as my preseason MVP. As of a month ago, I was still on that train. Seems like Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post did a survey of 100 NBA writers around the country, and it seemed like James Harden, you know, there are definitely some split votes, but it seemed like Harden had a comfortable lead. That said, I really think a lot of it is going to come down to how each player finishes the season. And that's why I think Russell Westbrook is going to, if he doesn't win it, he's going to gain ground, and it's going to be closer than it was 3 weeks ago. Because Kawhi, you know, the Spurs are now effectively locked into the number two seed. Kawhi is resting Friday. He sat out the second half of that Lakers game on Wednesday. Shout out to Coach Pop for that, because he made sure the Lakers won and anti-tanked. But, you know, you figure he's probably not going to have too many more, like, complete eruption games. James Harden has been battling a wrist injury since mid-March. He's been slightly less effective, it seems, especially shooting-wise. He had a couple really pretty mediocre games during that stretch, so he's not going to be closing the season as strong as you would like. The Rockets are also locked into the number three seed if that wrist injury is still bothering him. You know, knock on wood, the Rockets are smart enough to rest him for a game or two and let that get better, because it, you know, these games don't matter anymore for them. Russ, on the other hand, we mentioned this in the first half of this podcast, but, you know, again, we're recording this on Friday, so he has not officially broken Oscar Robertson's record of 41 triple-doubles. He has tied it. He's playing the Suns Friday night. He is almost certainly going to break it against the Suns. He's six assists away from averaging a triple-double on the year. And I keep coming back to this, like, you know, you can come up with advanced metrics to support any one of these guys, right? Like, Sarah, you brought up a bunch with Kawhi. For Westbrook, you could say, look, he's leading the league in PER, leading the league in assist percentage, leading the league in usage rate, box plus minus, value over replacement player. James Harden's leading the league with assists. Like, all of them have their individual things that they're doing incredibly well. The thing I keep coming back to in this debate is, like, if I'm looking back in 10, 15, 20 years to this season, what am I going to remember first? And it's going to be Russell Westbrook breaking Oscar Robertson's record and averaging a triple-double on the year. And, you know, this is all a long way of going back to those, you know, the conversation about preseason expectations and with teammates. Early in the season, or heading into the season, no one foresaw this season for the Rockets, right? Like, we all thought, you know, Mike D'Antoni's coming in, they brought in Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, they've retooled their roster a lot, they'll be intriguing, but they lost Dwight Howard, like, what, you know, they'll be a middling, like, lower-rung playoff team. So based on exceeding expectations, Harden, you know, he gets the bump there, but I go back and think, like, without Russell Westbrook, what would this Thunder team be? You know, I feel like the preseason perspective was, well, yeah, like, Russell Westbrook has better teammates than James Harden does, and now that narrative is kind of flipped because Eric Gordon's played so well, and they acquired Lou Williams at the trade deadline, and Clint Capella's played well in a bigger role, and Ryan Anderson played well, Patrick Beverley's still great. Like, a lot of the Rockets...
Russell Harrell.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, working in Harden's favor, I feel like, is the fact that he had to take on such a different role. Like, he never played full-time point guard before, and he accepted that role, and he did really well in it. You know, he's leading the freaking league in assists. Like, it's unreal. But I just keep going back to, like, without Russell Westbrook powering this Thunder team, like, they played Memphis the other night, right? And they had 45 points, 10 assists, 9 rebounds in a game where they won by 3. Like, if Westbrook doesn't play that game, they get blown out by 30, right? So that's where I keep going back to that thought. If we're, you know, Mort, you always bring this up when we talk about most valuable player, how there's no real one concrete definition.
Yeah.
And Rachel Nichols of ESPN has been rallying around that too, like how there should be a separate award for most valuable player being the best player in the league, which I think, you know, Kawhi has a very legitimate argument for that, and then the player having the best season. And I think because what Westbrook is doing is going to be, you know, it is a historical season, for that reason, I am leaning him. And I also just think, you know, he's not going to stop at 42 if he gets that, right? Like, I'm not worried about a slow close to the season for him. I feel like he's just going to go high octane the whole rest of the way. So, it's feasible he ends the season with 45 triple-doubles. Like, think about 5 years ago, a triple-double was, like, such an accomplishment, you know? And now it's just routine. Like, he had 12, 13, and 13 the other night, and that was a disappointment. It was like, oh, that's it? Like, where were the other 20 points? It's insane what he's done. So, I am, as of now, on the Russ train, but... you two both have Harden over Russ, and I want to hear why.
Well, before I go to that, I just want to bring up something in regards to Westbrook that I also appreciate a whole lot. Right now, he's nailed 192 triples. He's only broken 100 triple once, and that was last year. Mm-hmm. What's impressed me is his volume has increased. Like, I have a number here. Last year, 23.6% of his attempts with threes. Okay. This year, it's almost 30. So his volume has increased a lot, and normal logic dictates that your efficiency would drop.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, his has risen about 5 percentage points.
Yeah.
That's truly amazing. Like, he has become like a 30, almost 35% shooter on higher volume.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you, and he's going to end up the season having, this is ridiculous, like a total of over 2,500 points, 800 rebounds, and 800 assists for a 6'3 point guard. That's, yeah, I mean, so, and now to answer your question, wins.
Yeah.
Yep. That's honestly the only reason I have James Harden over Russell Westbrook. And also because I don't know if we should justify Russell Westbrook's award with the fact that it's associated with a triple-double, which, don't get me wrong, I mean, for the Thunder specifically, it's been essential, but on the surface, a triple-double is meaningless.
Right.
And that's kind of my problem. People are saying, well, he should win the MVP because of the triple-doubles. No. No, stop that. That's not the point. If he should win the MVP, it should be because he's like the major difference maker, which you alluded to, Brian.
Yeah.
And the fact that he closes games and he does all of these things, and he's just the Mac Daddy of the NBA. Instead, the narrative has been about, oh my God, the triple-double.
All right.
Screw the triple-double. That's not important.
Yeah.
Like, James Harden is right there in terms of the stats, almost, at least.
Yeah.
If you combine it. Like, right. He's, what, 1.9 rebounds away from averaging a triple-double himself.
Yeah.
I mean, so if that's the narrative that we're going to push, I mean, then I don't think it's a valid one. Like, if you're going to choose Russell, and again, your words, Brian, all of these guys are worthy.
Right.
Then it should be on more than just a triple-double idea. You know, it should be on the merits of what you bring to the table with, you know, using the eye test, looking at the results. Screw the triple doubles.
Yeah. And on that wins note especially, I'm glad you brought that up. It's only happened twice in the last 30 years where a guy won MVP and was not on a team that finished in the top two of his conference. It was Michael Jordan once, I think in 1988, and I want to say it was Karl Malone in 99, somewhere around there. So by that logic, you know, Harden, he's going to be third in the West, and Kawhi's going to be second. Russ, barring a catastrophic collapse from the Clippers, is going to be sixth. So he is, you know, we are asking something unprecedented, at least in the last 30 years, for him to win MVP. That said, what he's doing this season is also unprecedented. And on your note about his three-point shooting, his 34.7% is a career high for him, which is crazy.
It is. On 7.1 attempts.
Yeah.
So, and just to round out Westbrook a little bit, Sarah, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Have you noticed how fans are all about, you know, when they're downplaying Russ, they're talking about his turnovers?
Mm-hmm.
His 5.4 turnovers. Guess what? His turnover rate is lower than that of LeBron James.
Mm. Wow.
And I'm not talking about the raw stat, like his turnover percentage.
Yeah.
Right.
So the percentage of plays that he turns the ball over is less than LeBron James. Yet no one talks about King James turnovers. Mm-hmm. It's all about, hey, when all those raw turnovers, I have a major problem with that. Look at the usage rate Westbrook goes through. I mean, you have to, you know, draw a comparison to usage rate and percentages, especially in turnover percentages. And he's actually improved his ball handling by almost a percentage. Last year, he turned the ball over almost 17% of the time. This year, it's 16. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Also, Harden is averaging more turnovers. He's averaging 5.8. So you can't you can't use turnovers. That's the thing that works in Kawhi's favor. You know, he's very careful with the ball. If Harden or Westbrook win, they would have the most total turnovers of any player in NBA history. I think Magic Johnson is around 4.3, was the top MVP, or had the most turnovers of any MVP before this season. But that said, you know, again, you probably haven't had a guy with, definitely not with the Westbrook usage rate, and even with the Harden usage rate. So, Sarah, why do you have Harden over Russ right now?
For me, it's, honestly, it feels like splitting hairs a little bit because they are so close. I same as Mort, I would say wins. It's really the only difference. But there again, you know, you can make the argument that Russ has done more with less or from that team, was expected to do less. So the fact that they're going to maybe probably be sixth in the West is still a great accomplishment. Personally, not that I'm anybody to judge by, but I didn't have the Rockets or the Thunder in the playoffs in preseason. So, you know, that gives Harden the slight edge for me. But they've both been ridiculously impressive. Yeah, I would never argue that either of them don't deserve it. The part that I've talked about before, that where I think the goalposts get moved a little bit for Kawhi, is that we have to argue, you know, that, like, nobody else has it ever been where you say, well, his coach is too good.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, did anyone ever hold Phil Jackson against Jordan or Kobe or Shaq? You know, that's strange to me. I don't like that aspect of the whole argument, but I would never say that those other two guys aren't very deserving.
Yeah. Okay. Any final thoughts? We all have LeBron fourth on our MVP ballots, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then any final thoughts on this race, or should we turn our attention to Defensive Player of the Year?
This race has been so much fun. Like, I know that some of these arguments have been drawn out to the most ridiculous extremes, especially on Twitter, and a lot of people's emotions have gotten caught up in it.
Yeah.
But it's been so fun having a debate where we legitimately do not know who's going to end up with the award. Like, every year, as far back as I can remember, it's almost been sort of telegraphed Like, who's going to win it? I remember all the way back to when KG won it in Minnesota. It was like, oh, it's the All-Star break. We all know Kevin's going to win the MVP like four or five months from now.
Right.
It was so obvious. Having and not just having a two-man race, we are having a freaking 3-4-man race. That's fun. That's why we love this game, to dust off an oldie.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and I had LeBron, too. I would have had him... I would have argued more in his favor before they slipped so much in the last month.
Yeah,
But yeah, he was right there with the other three. My only last final parting shot would be that to draw attention to the fact that Kawhi has 26 30-point games this year, which is the most in a season by any Spur under Pop. So he's making history in the same way. Yeah. To me, that's almost as impressive as the triple-doubles. But, yeah, that's just not how Pop has even played with prime Timmy. So that's pretty impressive to me.
Or David Robinson, too, before Timmy.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not going to... Unfortunately, we're not going to find out who wins MVP for another 2 months. I think the NBA is going to announce it, I want to say, June 26th, which is after the playoffs, after the draft, all that good stuff. So it looks like
after the draft?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the draft.
Wow.
I know. It's a change. So, you know, a lot of people are bemoaning that change because we're not going to know who wins MVP for the playoffs, and it's looking like we're going to get Thunder Rockets in the first round. So if, like, you know, if Harden wins, would we get, like, super angry Russ? Or if Russ wins, would we get angry Harden?
Yeah.
But even under the old system, they didn't announce MVP until the second round. Remember? Because, like, we had the...
Right.
The 2000...
Opening of the second round.
Yeah. We had, like, the Dirk where the We Believe Warriors...
Yeah. That was fun.
Right. So no matter what happens, like, we could have had a similar situation here where, you know, Russ wins it, but then the Rockets knock him out in the first round, so...
Just look at that smirk on our Spurs fan here when she mentioned the Dirk thing. Yeah. Like, Sarah, you're just laughing your ass up right now because, Dirk got bounced in the first round. San Antonio represent, y'all.
No, everyone had crowned them that whole year. So, yeah, that was a fun year for me.
Well, at least you're not hiding it. I can appreciate that.
No, I can't.
All right.
By the way, one final note, though.
Yes.
I have to, because that was one of the things I forgot to talk about. So when you assume, or you have to assume when averaging a triple-double, right, that you would be playing like 40 goddamn minutes a night.
Sure. Yeah.
Russ is playing less than 35.
Unreal.
It's crazy.
I mean, come on,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely crazy.
Come on, man.
If Russ doesn't get real MVP, he deserves fantasy basketball MVP, because I'm going against him in the championship round right now, and it's just like, no matter how big of a lead I build in points, rebounds, assists, steals, three-pointers, it's just like, anytime he plays, that it gets wiped out immediately. It's so frustrating. And
he should get like a one-time award created by the NBA that's just called Stats King.
Yeah, like, what in the world are you doing? Starring Russell Westbrook. How is this possible?
Can you just imagine, like, Adam Silver, like, just like, and presenting the What on Earth Are You Doing Award? Meet our representative from Kia.
Right. All right. Let's move on to the Defensive Player of the Year, which is the other place where the three of us disagree the most. So, Mort, I'm going to throw this your way first. You have Mr. Big Bree himself, Rudy Gobert, as your DPOY. Tell us why you do.
Well, outside of being fantastic, here's the thing. When someone is shooting the ball within 6 feet of him, that person's shooting average goes down by 13.7%. Now, let's expand that to 10 feet. That person's average goes down 11.2%.
Man.
Fair enough, when it goes out to greater than 15 feet, it's only 1.8% down, but that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
He even defends three-pointers well. He takes almost 5% off that average. So he is, like, continuously bringing the percentage down of whatever shot he defends. He's 7'2". He's athletic, agile. He's got arms that could probably reach to France if he wanted to. I mean, you know, it's just the fact that the fear factor as well has just come such a long way. Mm-hmm. Like, his 2.7 blocks a game doesn't even do him justice, simply because guys aren't really daring to go at him as much.
Right.
If they did, he would have Dikembe Mutombo SWAT numbers. He really would. He is an uncanny shot blocker, both on his man and on the weak side. And it seems like that psychological effect that he has on guys is really, really benefiting the Jazz to a perverse degree almost.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's also, yeah, pulling down 13 rebounds, that's an argument. I always think of basketball as being three things. It's offense, it's defense, and it's rebounding, because I feel rebounding, it's sort of like a dead area. It's a dead ball that you have to go get. Mm-hmm. Like, it's no possessions land. But I can also appreciate that boxing out and grabbing defensive rebound kind of completes a defensive possession. And given that he grabs almost 9 defensive rebounds per game, I would say that is definitely, you know, accepted.
Yeah.
He's not a big steals guy, but like, he's 7'2". I mean, he's not like a small forward or a point guard, right. So I'm not gonna you know, trash him for not being Ben Wallace.
Right.
I mean, that would be unfair. It just seems like whenever someone is entering the paint, they're looking like a little bit over their shoulder for some sort of shooter. Like, can I pass it out?
Right.
I don't want to take that extra dribble. Like, where's my guy? Can I get a little bit? And so many floaters, you know, floating attempts. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's Gobert. I'm not going to go up with like a hard line layup. I'm going to have to put up a floater. And it's probably not going to be a good one, because his reach is going to go all the way over the basket anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just the fact that he does all these things is just so super impressive to me. And don't get me wrong, Draymond Green is high on the list, but I'm kind of digging this old school throwback center season that he has going on right now.
Yeah, I should note before we move on that all three of us have Draymond and Gobert in some order as 1 and 2. We all three have Kawhi at 3, and then we all three don't care about the rest, because this is a 3-man race. That said, Sarah, you and I have Draymond at 1 and Gobert at 2. So why do you have Draymond ahead of Gobert?
Well, if Tim Duncan never won Defensive Player of the Year, then Gobert can't win. No. There again, I think he's really deserving, but I think it's just Draymond's time, if that makes sense. I think, you know, he was right there the last 2 years, so I think he gets the edge over Gobert, who's kind of just emerging as this ridiculous rim protector. I've seen a stat passed around, and I've lost track of it, but someone posted about the fact that Draymond is also protecting the rim at an elite level. He's right up there with Gobert, but he's also contesting threes at a ridiculous level, which is something that you just don't see. And I hate defensive stats, though, because there's always a little bit of noise. I mean, some of the problem, honestly, with Kawhi is how rarely people test him. You know, people don't go at him, so those stats don't really work for him. So there's always that kind of thing that gets in the way. But Draymond, just what he's been able to do, we always talk about his versatility. Then the fact that KD, who kind of became the new centerpiece, a really important part of their defense, went down for so much of the year, and they somehow were able to almost even be better. Like, the defense that they played in the game against the Spurs that I got to see up close was ridiculous. You know, they came back. Obviously, they shot well to come back from whatever, 20 down, 22 down, whatever the hell it was. Yeah, that was really frustrating, not to get back into that, but to watch, because their shooting percentage, they started off at 0% for like most of the first quarter,
right.
And then it was like 20, 30, and they ended up, I think, over 50% for the game. Good so Lord. The idea of what they had to shoot for like the last 2 minutes of the first quarter and the rest of the game, the percentage had to be astronomical. But anyway, their defense is right there, as it's the top one in the league. I think it's been jockeying with the Spurs.
Yes.
They've been like a tenth of a percentage point.
Spurs are
within each other all year.
Tenths of a percentage, or 3/10 of a point ahead right now, but they're 2, 1.2 ahead of the Jazz.
And that wasn't supposed to be the case because they traded, you know, their rim protector away. But Draymond's making it happen even when KD went down. So to me, it's just the narrative of, you know, he's been doing it for a long time. He's deserved recognition. And I think he's finally going to get it this year.
Yeah, I versatility is the selling point for me as well. And that's nothing against Gobert, because you just can't expect a 7'2" guy to do that. But, you know, as you mentioned, Sarah, he's, you know, he's protecting the rim well. You said it well. There's a lot of noise in defensive stats, so it's hard to put too much into this. But that said, within 6 feet of the basket, opponents are shooting 13 percentage points worse than they usually do when Draymond is guarding them. They're shooting 5.4 percentage points worse on threes, 4.0 percentage points worse from 15 feet or further from the basket. So, you know, Gobert has those splits where it's really elite near the rim, but then it gets a little dicier with it further than 15 feet because, frankly, you don't want him to be venturing that far out of the, you know, you want him near the rim. You want him to block shots. You want him to get rebounds. But Draymond is doing all of that and more. And, you know, we've said it for 3 years now. Because Draymond could do, he could guard 1 through 5, that allows the Warriors to play the style that they do. And that unlocks this, like, death lineup. This unlocks the monster Warriors that we've grown to know and fear over the last couple of years. So, for that reason, I'm going Draymond. But, that said, you know, it feels like MVP again, right? Like, if Rudy Gobert wins, I'm not going to be upset. Like, he's very deserving as well. It's pretty close. It really just comes down to a matter of preference. Mort, any rebuttals?
No, I mean, I get the reasoning. I mean, look, Draymond Green as well, he's increased his steal percentage by 50% from last season to this season. That's amazing. That's a ridiculously high number. Leading the league in steals as well. And the fact that he so easily can switch onto quicker guards and is just that versatile all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge benefit. You can't go wrong with either. I like the tough physical presence of Gobert the most, simply because it's kind of old school and it works. And I could also see it being a huge factor in the playoffs, like, surprisingly so.
Yeah.
And then I guess it's also just the fact that it's a different name to throw in there as well, who has exceeded expectation. It seemed like it was Draymond and Kawhi.
Right.
Kawhi and Draymond. It was always those two. And, you know, Gobert has entered that little private twosome and said, you know what, I'm here too. And giving him legitimate love for the DPOY is also a means to say, you know what, he deserves to be like the third wheel in this.
Yeah.
He should be in this debate year in and year out because he's that good.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like all three of those guys, Draymond, Gobert, and Kawhi, are going nowhere in this race, and we will be having this discussion many times over in the coming years. All right, let's move on to Rookie of the Year, which took on a weird turn once Joel Embiid went down. You know, for the first half of the year, he was clearly the consensus pick. There was no obvious other front runner, probably Malcolm Brogdon. Once Embiid went down for the year, it became, you know, can Embiid win having only played 31 games? Dario Saric came on late in the year. Brogdon also played well. So, Mort, I'm going to throw this one to you again because you still have my boy, JoJo, as your Rookie of the Year. Is it just that his production was so much more impressive than the other guys, even though they've played longer?
Yep. I don't care. He's the best rookie.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real about this. I know it's just 31 games, and I know people are like, oh, you can't base anything on 31 games. Okay, here's my logic. If he had played 82 games as opposed to 31 games, pardon, would he have looked worse than Saric or Malcolm Brogdon? Hell no.
Right.
Like, that's... no. Not even close. He would have continued at a certain level of production that would have been significantly higher than that of his competition.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, it's Joel freaking Embiid.
I mean, here's all you need to say to make his case. So Adam Fromal of Bleacher Report has a site, NBA Math, where he's got a bunch of advanced statistics of his own creation. And he tweeted this yesterday. The Sixers play like a 49.9 win team with Joel Embiid and a 27.7 team win team mm-hmm. without him. So that is a 22.2 win swing. That is more than Harden, Westbrook, Kawhi. I think LeBron's actually a little has even more of a swing, which is already insane. But like he turns the Sixers from a lottery team to a would-be playoff contender. So, you know, for that reason, yeah. I think it's fair. The question is just, you know, historical precedent. But prior to this year, no guy had ever won it without playing at least 50 games. So,
and no one had averaged a triple-double in 50 years, or more than 50 years, so I don't give a damn about history right now.
That's fair. All right, Sarah, you and I both have Dario right ahead of Brogdon. So why are you going with the homie Dario, Sarah?
This one was one of the toughest ones for me, between this and Sixth Man, just because they both, to me, felt like two-man races, and it was really hard to pick one or the other. I partially feel like I'm being led by the fact that I had Saric in my preseason pick, so... That's part of it. That could be the one thing that I might end up right on. But he's just been slightly more productive, really. I mean, he's at like 13 points per game, 6 rebounds, couple assists. Both guys are shooting low 40s percentage-wise. I really liked Brogdon all year, too. I'm just glad that they'll be like rookie teams so they can all get recognition.
That's true.
He came out and I expected Sarge to be good, obviously, but the fact that I picked him to be rookie of the year, which of course we're not even having this conversation if Joel Embiid gets to play more games.
Right.
but I knew what I was getting from him. Brogdon came out of nowhere. You know, he wasn't overseas playing and really was important for his team, which is now a playoff team, dealing with injuries, you know, I just want to give the guy credit, but Sarge is just, he just has a slight edge for me in production.
Yeah. That's all. That's where I am too. You know, it's in early March when Sarge like had started to really come on, and Sixers fans started to realize, like, oh, he might steal Rookie of the Year from Joel Embiid, if not from Malcolm Brogdon. All these Bucks fans and Sixers fans start getting fights on Twitter, like, yeah, well, the advanced statistics are in favor of Brogdon. And then we're like, well, yeah, but Saric has 30 points in his last 15 games. What are you talking about? I mean, the fact that it's tough because, you know, Brogdon was more productive for longer, whereas Saric really came on hot after the All-Star break, and he benefited from Ersan Ilyasova being traded, Nerlens Noel being traded, Joel Embiid being out for the year, Jahlil Okafor being in and out of the lineup the last couple months, even, you know, when Covington went down the other week. So injuries have fueled a lot of his statistical support in the last couple weeks. That said, I mean, he's just proving, you know, it's kind of unfair to Malcolm Brogdon to hold this against him, that he's playing with Giannis, but, like, he doesn't need to be that number one option. Saric had to do that for a month, and he proved that he could, to the point now where it's like, you know, the question going into the year was, how does Saric fit with Noel, Okafor, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid? Heading into 2017-18, it's like, how does Ben Simmons fit with Saric? Like, he's played so well that you have to factor Saric in as, like, a part of the Sixers' future unless they trade him. And, you know, maybe they trade him for Aaron Gordon, as we mentioned on last episode. So, for that reason, I'm going Saric, just because he's shown the ability to have, you know, to be that number one option. But, Mort, I like your argument for Embiid, too. I mean, there is no question...
Well, obviously you do.
Yeah, there is no question... that Joel Embiid was the most dominant rookie this year. It's just 31 games of him versus 70-plus from Bogdan and Saric. And we should mention, you know, I brought this up on the last episode, too. Saric is on a 24-minute limit for the rest of the year. He's got plantar fasciitis. Malcolm Brogdon's been out for about a week or so with back issues, so both are kind of sputtering at the end. But I think, frankly, just because Saric is playing, he's going to... squeak Bragdon out, assuming he and Embiid don't split each other's votes.
I have a hard time.
Go ahead.
No.
I agree that I think you know, that kind of gave Sarge the edge. What we said may very well happen with Westbrook, where he's going to finish the year really strong. Mm-hmm. Of course, like you said, Brogdon and Sarge now are both sputtering a little bit. But, yeah, he kind of felt like he overtook Brogdon, like, in the last month. And like you said, a lot of that had to do with circumstances. But, yeah, it was more about the finish, which I hate because I love to reward the guy who's kind of been holding it down all year. But... yeah, I think that really was what happened. He overtook him there in the last few months, just having those explosions, mm-hmm. you know, 30-point explosions. So, yeah, I think that's what happened.
Can we also take a second and just recognize just the 2016 draft and how amazingly unimpressive it's been?
Yeah.
Currently, here's a weird stat for you. Of... The 30 first-round draft picks from last summer, only one guy, Buddy Hield, is averaging over 10 points this year. Hey. And that is 10.1.
So Vivek was right.
That is barely 10.
Vivek was right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been bad. I mean, yeah, it's worth noting, you know, Saric and Embiid were both drafted in 2014. Brogdon was a second-round pick. Right. Willie Hernan Gomez, who was also... you know, probably going to finish somewhere in the top five, was 2015, I believe. Yeah, it's been...
weird.
It's been a rough start for this draft class, but I'm holding... you know, people are already out on it. Like, it's so early. Like, I still think there will be multiple All-Stars that come from this class.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, knock on wood, Simmons included. all right, let's move on to Coach of the Year. Where, Mort, you're going to have a chance to make Sarah happy.
Yeah. It's Pop. I mean, look, I remember that Simpsons episode. I think it was one of those Halloween specials. Yeah. What's that called? Treehouse of Horrors or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Where the Earth is about to explode or implode or whatever, and there are spaceships standing by for celebrities. Including Michael Jordan. But apparently Lisa has the option of going on that spaceship. She can choose one of her parents. And this officer, he's kneeling down towards her. He's going to go, "I'm afraid you have a very hard decision. Mom." She's goes, "Mom." And that's how I feel with Coach of the Year and Pop. Just Pop. I don't care. This is the one award where I don't care about narrative, where I don't care about, you know, whatever around me. For like MVP, oh, it's like the definition game. Is it the best player? Is it whatever? No, Coach of the Year for me is the best freaking coach.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I want it to be. And the best freaking coach is now and always will be Greg freaking Popovich. I have absolutely no idea why anyone else should get this award until the day that he retires. I even want to take awards away from previous winners and just hand them to Pop. I will wrestle them. I will fight them.
Retroactively award them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, what does he have? Three Coaches of the Year awards? Three? Two? Three? Something like that?
I think it's three. Yeah.
Three? Three. Yeah. That's criminal. That's utterly criminal. He should have had 10 at the least. So I am all in on the what. Look, you could just copy paste this answer for next year. I'm gonna give you the same damn response.
That's fair.
Pop.
Yeah.
He lost Tim Duncan and he's won 60 games. I know he has Kawhi and that Kawhi guy is kind of good, but it's Pop, man. Obviously.
So, I mean, I don't think, if you're looking at it in terms of who is the best coach in the NBA, I don't think there will be any arguments from either one of us. That said, Sarah, you and I are leaning toward Mike D'Antoni for Coach of the Year. Why are you going for Mr. D'Antoni?
I think he's going to win, and I'm not mad at that. I am very tempted to puts Bolstrode just slightly ahead of him for the turnaround that they had. But D'Antoni, it's weird. I have a complicated relationship with D'Antoni stepping back to 2007.
Sure.
But when you put him in the right situation, when you give him a roster that can execute what he does, he's fantastic. I mean, he's proven that over and over again. So, being that the Rockets had the turnaround that they had, it's D'Antoni's first year stepping in, taking this roster that just got together, make it, you know, having the vision to make Harden the full-time point guard, even though he really was the primary ball handler before that. But
thank you.
He's really elevated his game too. So yeah, he's gonna win it. I'm pretty sure. I want Spoelstra to have credit for turning the team that was what 11-30 around and potentially sneaking into the playoffs here, especially if they make the playoffs. Not that it should make that big a difference, one game here or there, but that, to me, that's just a super impressive job. They've been hurt too, and he's adapted on the fly to turn this team around. To me, that's incredible. And yeah, I would probably have Pop third, but I guess we should just rename it after him at this point, and then, like, retire him from receiving it, but just call it the Pop Award.
Yeah. The Greg Popovich Coach of the Year Award.
Yeah. I could live with that.
Yeah.
I could live with that.
Yeah.
But if not, every year until he retires.
Well, Sarah, I'm with you for the same reason for D'Antoni. I think the fact, especially as you said, having the vision to turn Harden, just fully unleash him as the full-time point guard, and getting him to buy in, that, you know, that's an underrated thing. You, like, if you don't have buy-in from your superstar, it doesn't matter what system you run. Just ask the Knicks and Carmelo Anthony, you know? They didn't buy into the triangle, and they sucked all year. The fact that Harden, that D'Antoni could convince Harden, look, you know, I know this is somewhat of a departure for you. Like, yes, you played on the ball a lot already, but, like, you are going to be the architect of our offense. You are going to be responsible for getting yourself shots and you're getting your teammate shots every time down the court. And getting Harden to buy into that. And then, you know, like, he resurrected Eric Gordon, who we'll talk about shortly in Sixth Man of the Year. And then they acquire Lou Williams at the trade deadline. It took Lou Williams precisely zero time to get acclimated to the Rocket system. You know, this is where, more so than MVP, I feel like this Coach of the Year is where preseason expectations, it's, like, more fair to evaluate a coach based on preseason expectations. And the fact that the Rockets are going to exceed expectations so wildly by 10 or more wins, you know, based on pretty much, like, every major sports outlet that had preseason predictions, and Vegas Lions, I think, had them in the, like, mid-40s. They're going to finish third in the West, so D'Antoni's my guy. I like Spoelstra as well. Sarah, I think, you know, number two for me. It's weird to credit a guy for, like, you know, they were 11-30. Like, that's a
terrible to start. Right, yeah.
Right. Like, it's weird to credit him for, like, having such a drastic turnaround, but the fact that, you know, how easy would it have been for Miami just to throw in the tank and, like, you know, frankly, out-tank the Lakers at this point. So, for him to get his players to buy in and, you know, stay believing, you know, even if they finish outside of the playoff race, it's not going to be by very many games. So that's just a hell of a job. And then, yeah, Mort, you know, Pop is five on my list. I get what you're saying, but I just think, like, see what Brad Stevens has done in Boston this year. You know, him having Al Horford this first year has been really impressive. Scott Brooks with the Wizards, you know, they got off to a rocky start, and now they're playing really well too. So,
yeah, it's very nice. But you lose Tim Duncan, you win 60.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say; no argument is going to top that. And by the way, I'm going to report Sarah to the Spurs for treason.
Treason. Now, you know what? Technically, the official party stance of all the Spurs is they don't promote themselves for awards, so I think I'm good.
True.
Oh, that's true.
Good point.
Oh, then you shouldn't have voted for Kawhi.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's true. Good point. Although, before the season, I know Brian keeps saying he was my pick. LeBron was my official pick.
Oh, really?
But then, Yeah, he was my official preseason pick.
So mainly because I thought
that the finals were going to carry over.
Oh, yeah.
It was just so damn impressive that I thought people were going to come back around to, wait, what are we doing? LeBron is still the best. And I also didn't want to jinx Kawhi.
Oh, right. That was it. Now I remember.
I knew there had to be a motive.
Yeah. Kawhi was your actual pick. Yeah. You just weren't going to say it.
In my heart.
Right.
But, yeah.
No, I get what you guys are saying. Obviously, I do. It's more of a personal stance for me because of the way that these awards are always just determined by whatever the sports writers feel like at the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't official definitions to these things, mm-hmm. and it's frustrating as hell. So that's why in terms of coaching, it's just, for my end, from my perspective, I need to give it some sort of value and some sort of, I don't know, something stable, I guess. And for me, that is the best coach out there. And also just, he's gotten screwed so much. And what he does at times with so very little is amazing.
Yeah.
Even when Tim was on the downside of his career, before Kawhi really blossomed and Tony was starting to crack down a bit and, you know, Manu was getting older and bolder by the day. I mean, look, that 2014 team that just completely beat LeBron and Bosh and Wade in the prime of their careers, mm-hmm. and the Spurs themselves were just way over the hill. Kawhi wasn't even the current Kawhi. What he's doing out there as a coach from year to year to year to year, it's so darn impressive to me that I can't rightly choose someone else and say, oh, well, that guy is more deserving.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I just can't.
That's very, I mean, at this point, there's no peer of Pop in the NBA. You have to look,
exactly.
You have to look to all sports, and the only guy that I could think of in any sport that's even close to his territory is Bill Belichick of the Patriots. But,
right.
You know, like,
And another thing is this, like, Michael Jordan won 5 MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
Should have won probably 7 at the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
He should have won it over Barkley in 93 and Carmelo in 97.
Mm-hmm.
And it always annoys the hell out of me that he was kind of a victim of voter fatigue.
Mm.
And it seems like Pop is now experiencing that. That's the best coach of all time. We're going to look back at this 10 years from now and go, oh man, we kind of screwed Pop, didn't we?
Yeah.
Probably. So I'm trying to tell people right now, don't screw Pop. You can still somewhat save it.
Yeah.
You have this opportunity right here, right now, to give him the award that he so overwhelmingly deserves.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on to Sixth Man of the Year. We have a consensus here, so we will zoom through this one. But I just want to say, you know, for the first half of the year, this was a great race between Eric Gordon and Lou Williams. And then the Rockets traded for Lou Williams, and now this race sucks. Because Lou and Eric Gordon have kind of just siphoned, like, touches from each other, and both guys, their production has decreased substantially since the trade. So, we all have Eric Gordon as our number one, but I want to use this opportunity instead to shine a light on some of the other deserving candidates. So, Sarah, I know you want to praise someone we've already discussed earlier in the episode.
Wait, who?
Didn't you say you wanted Gobert here?
Oh, no, that was for Most Improved.
Oh, whoops. Okay. Just kidding.
No, we're good.
Oops. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry
for ruining that. No problem. It's just, like you said, I kind of had Lou, but...
Mm.
It just made it so interesting that he ended up on the same team as his primary competitor for this award. They're so close for on the season, and then, like you said, since they've come together, they've kind of decreased each other's numbers. But I would throw Iguodala in there, even though he hasn't had a terrific year. He's come on strong. I joked a long time ago that I felt like he was probably just shifting comfortably into his Robert Horry twilight of his career, where he's just going to coast through the regular season and kill in the playoffs. And it's starting to look like that's going to happen because he has been terrific over the last few weeks for them.
Yep.
So he's come on strong. He won't win it and probably shouldn't, and that's fine for the regular season. Zach Randolph is an interesting choice. I know that it's kind of... I think Zach Lowe even had in his 10 things I like and don't like today that the matchup with him and Brendan Wright is not ideal coming off the bench. But he's been really good for them this year, and the willingness to come off the bench and help that team and Jamichael Green starting has been great for Memphis. There's one other guy that I had in my mind, and now I can't remember.
Pau Gasol? Any Pau left?
There you go. Yeah. I think I was thinking of Pau. Nice. Of course, he hasn't come off the bench all season, but... Yeah, he's been terrific off the bench. He's, like, smashing records, franchise record for the Spurs of seven-footers hitting threes. He's also got an incredible percentage. I don't know if he qualifies in terms of attempts yet, but I think he's got at least 50 attempts, and his percentage is over 50%, so it's nuts.
I could just,
he's just shooting really well from the corner.
Theo Morton simmering over there.
What? I'm simmering?
Yeah.
No.
All right.
What I'm trying to do right now is locate a tweet that I had about Eric Gordon.
Oh.
Because I was waiting to talk about Eric Gordon.
Oh.
It's because he had a whole month where he practically outshot the whole team of the Chicago Bulls from free.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So.
I thought you were going to be mad about Powell coming off the bench and playing well. Because.
No. You know what? He has. He's turned into, a sniper. Mm-hmm. It seems like every time I check a box score from a Spurs game I haven't seen, he's 2-for-2.
I know. It's absurd. Yeah. All right. Well, I will let you... you can take the Miami guy that I like in this race. I'm going to shout out Greg Monroe because, it looked like he was in danger of falling out of Jason Kidd's favor early in the year. And then lately, he's turned it on. He's become a very valuable piece for the Bucks off the bench. So, Sarah, I'm with you. It's between Gordon and Lou Williams. I have Monroe fifth on my board, Iggy fourth. And then I actually have James Johnson second, who more. Yeah. I know you wanted to steal that one. James Johnson has played absurdly well. And he was on the Orlando Magic's whiteboard. He's going to get paid this summer.
Big time paid.
Yeah.
Now he's actually become that. It's kind of ironic because when he was drafted by the Bulls back in 2009, I think it was. Yeah, yep. 2009. At the time, I said this was the perfect guy to get on your bench and become the official sixth man because he could play both forward spots. He was a strong athlete, a kickboxer even. He had a really elite athleticism on many ways, his agility and everything was just, he had so much going for him. Mm-hmm. And he was traded very, very shortly into his second season. I was like, no, okay, that's kind of curious. And then he started playing well with Toronto and I kind of thought, okay, now he's going to found his place to be. And nope, he started bouncing around. And the Heat, at age 30, no less, is where he finds his home, on the turnaround Heat that started the season 11-30. That's weird and fantastic all at once, but he's been doing so well, shooting the three ball, getting to the line, rebounding, passing, because he has that ability. He's the type of guy who can go out there and get 15-5-5 on, whenever he wants to, basically if he gets the minutes.
Yeah.
He's an all-around guy. And he picks up blocks and he picks up steals. And again, one of those guys who doesn't really have a definite weakness, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Just a stable son of a gun.
I mean, we talked about the Heat's turnaround already. He was a huge part of that. He and Deion Waiters, they really needed that extra push from, Dragic and Whiteside have been playing well for most of the year, but they needed someone else to compliment those guys, and Johnson especially. He had 26 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, a couple of threes the other night. He was playing in the starting lineup because Luke Babbitt was hurt, but yeah, he's been a monster this year, so he deserves some love in sixth man of the year. Okay, so let's move on to most improved player. No arguments here. All three of us have Giannis. So, Sarah, now I'm going to let you praise Mr. Gobert as a other... We'll call these, like, the honorable mentions of most improved player.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we all picked Giannis, even though I feel a little weird about it since he still has that, hopefully, potential to get that jump shot going, and it just becomes a destroyer of worlds. So I almost want to reserve it, leave it open for him till he does that. But yeah, he's earned it this year. Gobert, just because I remember seeing him, I think in the 2014 World Championships, just when he first started playing for France for the national team, and remember thinking that he maybe had some potential, but just, you know, thin guy. You never were sure how that pans out, you know, tall, thin dudes. Can be great, can be you fall over tying their shoes, you know.
Right.
But God, just I didn't see, especially this fast, the improvement that he's made and just become a true anchor, a centerpiece for this Jazz team that I want to give them some love later too, in one of our next awards. But yeah, just he's been really improved, and since I'm still not giving him this award, so I don't know that it helps, but since I didn't give him Defensive Player of the Year, it's like, I definitely want to give him some love for Most Improved as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you know, he's gotten to the point where, like, I almost feel like the Jazz would be better off trading Derek Favors this summer and just letting Gobert run wild as their main front court option.
Oh, absolutely.
But that said...
Like, it's not even fun.
Yeah, that said, Favors is supposed to be coming back. I think he's playing tonight, Friday, so we're going to have to see. Seems risky, honestly, to have him... You know, Gobert has been on such a tear lately, but I guess you can't keep Favors out if he's healthy. But, alright, Mort, who do you want to give love to in MIP, aside from the Greek Freak?
Well, you got to look at both Nikola Jokic and Otto Porter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and those are pretty self-explanatory, to be honest. Porter has become one of the league's best shooters, like, from all over the court,
yep.
Which is not something I expected with him coming out of Georgetown. I knew he could shoot, but not to this extent.
Yeah.
He's really been a knockdown shooter, like a real sniper. And Jokic is just... a magician, really. I can't even describe what he does out there. Sometimes the way that he drops those no-look passes behind his head, and, like, while he dominates the boards and shoots the three, and it's not like he's overly athletic. He does it on high IQ. Like, he's... I had a thought the other day, like, he's Paul Pierce, the center version of Paul Pierce, prime Paul Pierce. Like, just the way that he gets to the rim, the way that he facilitates and the way he executes, it's got Paul Pierce written all over it, which is amazing for a guy 6'11", 7 feet, whatever he is. So yeah, definitely some love to Jokic and Porter, and we're probably going to find Jokic in a couple of years on the MVP list when we have this debate again. I mean, it wouldn't even surprise me at all. So yeah, thumbs up for those guys.
Yeah, I mean, based on what we saw from Jokic, you know, we mentioned this in last episode, how he started the year next to Nurkic, and then he went to the bench, and then he finally got moved back into the starting lineup. Since December 15th, which is when he started and Nurkic went to the bench, he has been an absolute dynamo. You know, it's how many big men could you say are triple-double threats with points, rebounds, and assists?
Yeah.
Very few, if any. So... I mean, what we've seen out of Jokic, like, there's a very real argument. You know, he's already, what, the second best player from his draft class?
I would say so.
Yeah, so he's very impressive. The other guy, I had, like you, Mort, Giannis, Porter, Jokic as my top three. The one guy I wanted to shout out also is Miles Turner. I feel like, you know, he's been kind of rocky as of late, but just in general... You know, there's all this unicorn talk about, you know, Embiid and Karl Anthony Towns and Kristaps. Miles Turner deserves to be in that conversation, too. He's not as good as those guys, but he's still very unicorn-esque.
He's like a sick unicorn.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. A unicorn with, like, a broken leg or something like that.
Like, with allergies. A unicorn with allergies.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, he literally just turned 21 at the end of March. Like, the dude has a sky-high upside. If, for whatever reason, the Pacers do trade Paul George this summer, he's the type of guy... Like, they still might have a franchise player on their roster because Miles Turner is there. So, he's not a top three guy in MIP for me, but he deserves some love. So, let's wrap things up with Executive of the Year. Sarah, you've been driving the Dennis Lindsay train all year. Are you still on that boat?
I am deeply offended that neither of you two had him anywhere on your lists. I think he's done a terrific job putting that team together. Utah is already, I think they've got 4 games left to play, and they're already 8 wins better than last year. Going from missing the playoffs to fighting for the 4th or 5th seed in the West. And they probably have more games lost to injury than just about any other team. So, you know, the fact that they were able to do that, I've just loved the makeup of that team from the beginning. And yeah, I guess maybe some of it is subconscious bias. The fact that they picked up 2 former Spurs over the summer.
right.
But yeah, that Joe Johnson, I love that team. But that said, I have finally come around to the Daryl Morey train. I think, you know, we dog a lot of times on here, executives and front offices that, you know, they'll hire a coach or champion a system and then not build a team to fit the coach or the system. And, right. You know, so I think it seems right to reward Morey for, you know, he obviously had a philosophy for how he wanted to play. He had acquired the star to run that. Then he went, got a coach who saw it the same way he did and built the roster to support that and execute that. So I feel like he should be rewarded for that. I'm not a huge fan of Morey Ball. I hope it doesn't completely take over the league. I'm cool with a few Morey Ball teams, but that's not really the time or the place to worry about it. He's done a terrific job, so he deserves it.
Yeah, I'm with you and Morey atop my ballot. Bob Myers of the Warriors is number 2 for me. He's number 1 for you, Morey. Why do you have Myers over Morey?
Come on now.
Come on now. Does it start with Kevin and end with Durant?
Basically, yeah. Like, if you can convince Kevin Durant to switch allegiance, you deserve to be at the top of that list. Side note, it has just been confirmed, as we're recording this podcast, Mr. Durant will play Saturday without nice. Minutes restriction.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yep.
Oh, that's a... Huh. Mm-hmm. That's a surprise. Okay.
So, that's awesome. But getting back to the matter at hand, the executive of the year, I just think that, I mean, Durant is an MVP caliber player. So whenever you can get one of those guys in, you deserve, yeah, to get your head, your name, you know, bummed up to the head of the list. I mean, how can you not? I get what you're saying, Sarah, totally. Mm. I think there is great honor in being able to build a team, like with emphasis on team, all caps team, like Lindsay, and also to some extent Morey and Masai Ujiri. I mean, there are a lot of names out there, but superstars win. Superstars drives the league. When you can get a guy like that to join your team, it brings it up to a whole nother level for me personally. So yeah, I gotta go Bob Myers. I mean, look at that team that he's assembled. It's,
yeah.
I mean, look, Avengers Assemble. Come on, it's it's right there, right?
As Sarah called them, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse,
which is a brilliant name, by the way.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, yeah, that is the argument for Myers, and also to his credit, you know, yes, he acquired Kevin Durant, but he also got Zaza Pachulia on the biannual exception.
He did.
You know, he was willing. He engineered a trade to get Harrison Barnes, get Andrew Bogut to Dallas to create the cap room for it. Like, it was not an easy play to get the cap room for Kevin Durant. And he knew he was going to have to sacrifice a number of bench pieces as well, Leandro Barbosa, Maurice Spates, etc. So for him to have the confidence in himself to say, like, yeah, we can fill out the bench. You know, all we need is Iguodala and Livingston, and then we'll have, like, Ian Clark come off and play better. We'll bring in JaVale McGee, who's, you know, aside from pissing off the Warriors, he played well this year. So that all those things do work in Bob Myers' favor as well. That said, it feels like he's somewhat of a beneficiary both of an unprecedented cap spike and, you know, Stephen Curry's way below market contract. Like, this was the natural culmination of, like, 3 years of work, whereas Morey totally overhauled that roster in a year. You know, they got rid of Dwight Howard, they brought in Eric Gordon, Anderson, they were willing to play Capella more, they brought in Nene, who has played really well this year, Harrell, as you mentioned earlier. So for that reason, I'm going Morey over Myers. I mean David Griffin of the Cavs deserves a shout out. It continues to amaze how he turns what little assets they have in terms of trade value into productive players. Kyle Korver, Darren Williams, Andrew Bogut before he got hurt, Larry Sanders now, and then also the two guys who probably had, I guess Morey also had a really good trade deadline, but Donnie Nelson of the Mavericks, yeah, and Masai Ujiri of the Raptors both took advantage of desperation at the trade deadline and stole players for far more, or far less than they were actually worth.
And good finds for Nelson as well. Yoki Ferrell.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your boy Seth Curry?
Seth Curry, yeah. I mean, okay, as we argued the last time around, it was obvious. Come on, say it with me. Obvious. When a guy can shoot, he needs to, like, be coveted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And for some reason, he wasn't. But good on Nelson for getting him on that deal, though.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, he's had a hell of a year. I mean, frankly, none of these awards, outside of maybe most improved player, if you're willing to go the Giannis route, none of them are shoo-ins. Like, every one of them, there are multiple deserving candidates.
Yeah.
It's just, like, personal preference comes down to all of these. So, any final thoughts on any awards before we wrap things up, guys?
Just don't ring me in the middle of the night when Kawhi wins, Brian, and cry.
My parting thought is don't be a dick on Twitter when any of these awards actually get announced.
Oh, that's a good one.
And I'm not saying that to you. I'm addressing that to everyone.
Yes.
Everyone.
Like, Morton, don't be a dick.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, yeah.
You know
yeah.
It's coming, though. There's going to be people that think it's a travesty if somebody wins, and it won't be.
Yeah. Like, right. God damn it, Trevor Ariza didn't win MVP? Are you kidding me?
Right. Yeah. So, everyone, take these awards what they are. They're rewarding accomplishments of things that we just didn't expect to see this year. This has been an unbelievable regular season, far better than I think any of us expected, you know, especially coming into the years. It looked like, who cares what the regular season holds? It's going to be Warriors, Cavs 3 in the finals. Doesn't matter. This is by far exceeded expectations. So we just want to, all three of us want to thank you for joining us throughout the regular season. We hope we've provided some entertainment. And on the bright side, there'll be very little Sixers talk until May 16th from this point forward, because the medical staff can only kill their players for 6 more days. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. Remember, follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all three of our handles in the bio, so give us a follow on Twitter as well. You can find us this year on iTunes, so check us out there. Subscribe, download. You can find the iTunes link at the bottom of our Audio Boom page. And then we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports. So check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, we're going to have a playoff preview, guys. But I was joined, as always, by Morton Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
Likewise, Brian.
You too. Good talk, boys.
All right, take care.